vendas na vida real, the real life in sales show, as we translated to English, your channel to learn about sales from people with skin in the game and a lot of real life experience to share. I'm Gabriel from Site Center, and I'm going to be your host for today's episode. Today, you're having Emily Monquist from Vino. She's our first international interviewee speaking to us directly from Sweden. Is that right?
Yes, from Stockholm.
Exactly. Emily is a marketing manager from Vino Sales Intelligence Platform. Emily, would you introduce yourself in Vino, please?
Of course. And first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's super exciting. And
thanks for coming.
It's a really cool topic. Yeah, thank you. I think I'm going to start by introducing Vino, actually, because I think it's a bit more sense. It's a European SaaS company. We were founded in Helsinki, in Finland, actually, in 2013. We're now active in a lot of countries. So I'm in Sweden and I also work with Denmark, and we have some markets here in Europe. But what we are doing is that we're building a sales intelligence platform that helps salespeople and marketeers to move forward. So that means that we have created this like huge company database. It's actually the largest company database in Europe. And with that, we collect and we read and we understand basically every company information that's ever been written. And then we make sure that these like company insights, these real-time insights, are easily consumable and accessible directly in the customer's existing systems. So we're basically putting all this company information in the CRM or in the marketing automation platform or whatever they're using, to make sure that salespeople and marketeers are focusing on the right companies at the right time with the right message. So it's a super cool company. We're a team of 150 people and work with around 2,000 companies across Europe. And I work as a marketing manager for our Swedish and our Danish market, which is pretty new. I usually say that I'm a very, very sales-driven marketeer. I actually started in a sales role. I went over to marketing, but I'm still like a little bit in between working in a very sales-driven role, so to speak, to align global and local marketing efforts and to make sure that we're selling a lot from our marketing pipeline.
That's perfect. I love marketing managers with the strong sales approach.
Yeah,
and that's really nice to have you here. We're going to speak about real-time sales today, which is exactly the topic you guys in Vino nailed, right?
Yeah, I like to think so, at least. I hope so.
That's perfect. Have you ever had customers from here, from Brazil, or maybe Latin America?
I'm actually not completely sure, because we don't actively sell outside Europe. We haven't done any outbound sales there, and we don't have a database in Latin America. We get actually a lot of demo requests from outside our own markets, like companies expanding to the Nordics and wanting company information. So there might be some Brazilian companies. I have to look that up, I think.
Yeah, I hope we get there. And as we were discussing previously, there is a lot of room for growth, for growing our businesses abroad. So I think you guys would be great help. I had a demo from Vino, totally recommend. If you're thinking about expanding to these markets, take a closer look. But for now, let's kick off the subject. Emily, what's real-time sales and why is it important to make notice of the trend right now?
Yes. So I think if you're Googling real-time sales, and especially if you're outside of the Nordics, you will probably see a lot of resources and content and blogs from cool companies such as Intercom and Drift. What they're doing is it's really good content, but they're focusing mostly on like the inbound part of real-time sales. And they're talking a lot about how timing matters when you're reacting to demo requests and hot leads, etc. But in my opinion, and in our opinion, like real-time sales is about so much more than that. It's basically about reacting to all kinds of triggers. So inbound triggers and outbound triggers, and using all available data to make smarter decisions throughout your sales process. So you're using relevant real-time data to make decisions about which companies to call, when to reach out, and what to say to them when you're talking to them. So that's basically what real-time sales is about.
And that's perfect, because we don't talk a lot about real-time sales in Brazil so far. So it's kind of, I'm not sure if it's a new thing, but definitely not a widespread term. Therefore, it's really good to learn from you and trying to bring a little bit more about how we can. We have kind of a data-driven approach, but how can we use this data-driven approach in a slightly smarter way than we're doing right now? I hope we can learn some new stuff from you. Thanks for the first answer. So, Emily, one more important thing about this real-time sales. Why do you think it matters now in this moment of the market? What does it bring to the table now?
Yeah, obviously, like, it's always been an advance to be relevant and smart throughout the sales process. But what has changed lately is the access to data and access to information. And I believe there's research saying that 90% of the data that's available at the moment was created last 2 years. So like, the amount of data is growing so fast. And some companies already use this information. It's super common, like B2C, you all know that a lot of companies like e-commerce, etc., are using a lot of information about their customers and prospects in order to make these like highly targeted campaigns and to be like super relevant. Whilst in B2B, we're still a little bit behind. Like, companies are still buying like very static lists where they're calling like up and down, or they're sending like these mass emails. But with all this information, the buyers are also demanding more. They want the people that are buying from you today, they are the same people that are buying B2C. And they also have so much information about you, about your competitors, about your company. When you're talking to them, they're expecting better conversations, which means that you as a salesperson also have to be more informed and use all this data in order to provide them a better buying experience. And that's, using this data is really what real-time sales is all about.
That's awesome. You said 90% of current available data was generated in the past 2 years. Is that correct? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, that's what I've read, at least. It's just doubling all the time. So yeah, there's so much data and so much information.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I think it's a great time to think about this subject and try to bring a little bit more about this concept to our sales processes, both in pipeline generation, in the sales funnel, inbound, outbound, you know, all these channels we can make to generate pipeline. And now, talking about inbound and outbound triggers, I think, I mean, they're quite different stuff, but sometimes they're quite similar stuff also. So how do you kind of summarize shortly the similarities and differences between inbound and outbound triggers in terms of real-time sales? How do you put those two things in perspective?
Yeah, so overall, like, a trigger event is like an occurrence or an happening in a company that creates an opening for sales and marketing. So something that changes or something that happens that increases the likelihood of the customer or the company customer. But an inbound trigger, I think most people know that. It's like a demo request or a hot lead, someone that's been very active with your content, etc. While outbound triggers, I think, are more unfamiliar for a lot of salespeople. Basically, like, these relevant external company changes. We always say that like a need for a company always starts with a change. And that means that a sale always starts with a change. For example, a recruitment company wants to track when other companies are expanding to a new market, because that usually means that they have a need to recruit more at that market, recruit new people. So outbound triggers, to summarize it, it's these company changes or these data-driven reasons for why a company is a better prospect for you now than they were maybe like a week ago, if that makes sense for you.
That's exactly, for me, one of the most important questions I've ever crafted in sales processes, like, why is it relevant for you to speak to us right now, right, a month ago or in 1 month from now? And it's like,
yeah, and I think that's the most important thing, like, because sales is all about like reaching out when the timing is right, then doing it, of course, in the best possible way. But if you're, doesn't matter how good the prospect is, but if you are, as a salesperson, isn't talking to them when they have a need, you will never close the deal. And talking about like differences and similarities between the two, we actually done some tests internally, and we were, you know, just tweaking and testing our own processes. And we've seen, like, in terms of like numbers and results, there's not too much of a difference between two of them. Obviously, with inbound triggers, they know more about your company and like, you know, the ramp up phase might be a little bit shorter. They aren't always good either. Like an inbound trigger, an inbound lead, it can just mean that they're very interested in your content. They think that you're such a good content writer or something, but it doesn't have to be a very good company. While the outbound triggers, there's something that actually like triggered some change that triggered in this company that could be even better than inbound ones. So hit rates can be pretty much the same, actually.
Yeah, I think so. I believe the beginning on the inbound market thing, it was like a completely new thing. So any white paper you put out would spread and bring some qualified leads nowadays, a bit more competitive and not always so easy to set out to inbound leads either. But
what's good with the outbound triggers is that if you reach out to them quick enough, they usually haven't started looking for solutions yet. So with inbound leads, there's a good possibility that that inbound is also looking at all of your competitors and just asking for help. Yeah, most likely. That's often the case.
All around.
Yeah, and then you have to be in this like competitive phase where you have to adapt your price. In outbound triggers, if you're reacting very, very quick to them, there's a good likelihood that you're actually way faster than your competitors and that you're able to close the deal without having to do all these adjustments.
That's actually a great insight. I had never put it that way. If you have the right outbound triggers in place, you can actually get a lot earlier in the buying process of the prospect and generate value from that time on. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That's perfect. Trying to explore a little bit more on the inbound side, which are the cases you notice to be more effective in real-time sales inbound triggers? Which new things kind of, or which cases have you seen happening maybe on final clients or with your experience, that's how you should use real-time sales for inbound leads?
So it obviously depends very, very much on like how your marketing setup is. If you're a rather small company, you might not have a really large marketing department and you might not have all these cool marketing automation tools, etc. And while if you're a larger company, of course, you might have a bigger stream of inbound leads. But I would say that it's just about having, first of all, like know your ideal customer profile. And to improve like conversions, just like focus on the inbound leads that are actually good leads for you, while adding like company data to the process of like qualifying leads and routing leads and everything. You can actually get a lot more information and easier qualify these leads. So say you have, you're a larger company and you have a lot of inbound leads and you have a problem deciding which of these companies to focus on. And you have a problem giving these leads to sale quick enough. And you might have like a lead scoring process already and you get scored, you know, you're probably familiar with lead scoring, I would assume.
Yeah, I hope our audience too.
Yeah, I think so. What I was saying is just that make sure that you're focusing on the right companies. At Viner, for example, and a lot of our customers, we're adding like company data to the lead scoring process. So obviously like leads get scores usually on the contact profile and attributes.
Yeah.
And, you know, like intent data, how active they've been with your content, etc.
Yeah, behavior.
But that isn't the only data you should focus on, because that doesn't necessarily mean that this lead is good, because the company attached to that contact also has to be good for you. It has to be within your ideal customer profile. So if you add company data, say you add a company database, and you can also see that this lead works at a company within your preferred industries, and they're using certain platforms that integrate with you, for example, they're active in your preferred markets, then that's a good lead and they should have a higher score. And if you automize this entire process, you can easily like, you know, rank the inbound leads and then also give them to sales much quicker, because you don't have to do all this manual work of qualifying these leads.
That's perfect. So you can actually use company data to kind of reach, improve your list, and then you will have a bit more improve your assertiveness in terms of approaching, right?
Exactly, to make sure that you're focusing on the right inbound leads. And then also, like we mentioned before, it's very important to reach out to inbound leads as soon as possible. And with this setup, where you're qualifying them automatically or less manually, you can actually improve the time it takes to reach out to a lead. And then obviously, like, you will see a better hit rate with that as well.
That's perfect. And in terms of using data to kind of build pipeline, you mentioned ICP, you mentioned triggers. Could you explore a little bit more this topic? And how do you guys, how on your work, usage of data to build pipeline in terms of getting to know the ICP, the right ICP, how do you approach this topic over there?
Of course. ICP, or ideal customer profile, I think that's where everyone just have to start, whether it's inbound or outbound. And ICP is like a fictive, made up description of your best customers. So I would recommend everyone listening and everyone trying to build pipeline to just like decide on that first. Do it by like checking your current customer, check your best customers. Like, what common traits do they have in common? What happened in the organizations just before they signed with you? So there was probably a change in their organization that happened, the trigger that they bought from you. And then use all this information and these data points to find similar companies. And then basically, like, obviously, not to be biased, but it's preferred to have some kind of like sales intelligence tool or some kind of like database where you go, where you can easily like segment companies that look or that are similar to your current customers. But just make sure that you're focusing on the right customers or companies. I think that's step one.
I totally agree with that, because we are in 2020 and we have a lot of technology out there to help us to work smarter. So why not make use of it, right?
Of course. And there's also other good, like, you can use LinkedIn to follow like Sales Navigator, to follow like new appointed managers, etc. But like, we have this rule at Vinyl in our outbound or in our sales team that you're only allowed to contact a company if there's a data-driven reason. So like a company change, an event that happened. And then we're tracking all these events. So we're obviously using Vinyl, but also LinkedIn. So for example, if there's a new sales director or company expanding to a new market or something, like, we're making sure that we're reacting on that as soon as possible. And that's how we're building pipeline. So every time we start a new opportunity or a new deal in our CRM, we always add that reason for why we're reaching out as well. So we have that as actually a mandatory field in our CRM.
Which is the change happening
on the other side,
right?
Yeah, like, what triggered us internally to start a workflow towards this company.
That's amazing. And in terms of examples, you mentioned a lot of market expansion. You mentioned a lot the change of seats on the other side on the client company. And here also, it's common when some kind of startup raises investments, but the volume of it makes it almost irrelevant. Which other kinds of outbound figures workflow could you bring us as examples? How you guys do their advice, for example?
There's so many, and I think the one you mentioned is very good. Like, if a company gets an investment, that obviously gives them more room to do new things and to invest. But I can give more examples, from our sales process. So like you mentioned, and like we mentioned before, like, all these changes within a company, they're always the reason for why a company needs something more. So imagine, like, if my company would open an office in Brazil, for example, I don't know anything about that market. I have to make investments for that market. I probably have to hire, local people. I have to hire local buy local tools. I might need a new office and office supplies and all these things. So it's all about like checking your own customers and then trying to figure out like what is a good timing. But going back to like our sales process, like, new sales directors, perfect signal, because new sales directors always have a budget and they're always like hired for a certain reason. Maybe that, when you're a new, So what we do is that we have this predefined workflow for all these triggers. So we have, say we have five triggers internally that we know that these company changes or these events are really good for us to act on. And then we have written down, or we have decided like how to act on these triggers beforehand. So for new sales directors, for example, like if I get a signal from Vine or from LinkedIn that a new sales director at a company within our ICP has been appointed, usually just connect with the person immediately. Either I call or I reach out on LinkedIn or email. But I don't start by talking about myself. I start by referring to the company change or the trigger. I start by saying,
people
like,
listen to that.
Yeah, people listen to that. People want you as a salesperson to talk about them and to understand them. So I would start by like, hey, congratulations to your new role. That's super exciting to be leading the sales department. And then continue like, we meet a lot of sales directors in your position and have seen a lot of the challenges and the opportunities they're facing. And then I would actually use like content and be like, hey, we actually put together a starter kit for new sales directors. Would you be interested in me sending you this?
Basically, you understand the other person and you empathize with what him, he or her feeling, and then can actually offer something relevant to their moment. And putting myself on these sales director shoes, this approach sounds, you really are a very sales marketing person.
Yeah.
It was quite convincing.
Yeah, and like you said, like, and it's all about like giving before you're taking, and you don't start by talking about yourself. That's kind of outdated, I would say. We were sending, like, we put together, we worked very close, our sales team worked very close with marketing team, obviously. So we've created this like resource kit for new sales directors. So something that we created or tailored for that trigger. And it could be like a onboarding playbook or a sales playbook or something. It's actually like super cool because when I sent them this kit over email or over LinkedIn, and then if they actually like clicked those links and downloaded that ebook, then I would make that outbound trigger kind of inbound in my marketing automation platform, see that that person I reached out to, they were also converting on our site and they downloaded this content. So it must be relevant for them.
I love the relationship between inbound and outbound. And I really hope people listen to what you just said and apply that. Like, don't ever talk about yourself and reaching out to somebody. People most of the time just won't care concerning about themselves. So
yeah, and people want to talk about, like, people want help with their issues. So like, if you're sending them content and you're seeing that they're reading it and they might be reading it multiple times or reading something else that you posted, then you probably know more about like their issues and their challenges. And that's something to also talk about. So like, going back to the conversation with the sales directors, like if they were super involved with what I sent them, I could have a very good discussion with them. And then eventually go into like Vainu and how we could help them, of course. And then it was like super easy to book a meeting because we had this very good conversation going already. And the conversation was focusing on them and their problems. But I have a solution that can help them in that phase or in the challenge.
Eventually, you're going to get to talking about yourself. Mm. And that's actually the connection to the next question I'd like to have to make for you. Mm. Is basically the examples on how to use data in discovery and solution stages, because we're talking about a lot about building pipeline, but how to leverage the data and to be more relevant throughout the process to improve the sales numbers, like which internal and external data can be relevant for these matters, for this moment?
It's a good question. And I don't think that people talk about it enough, because people usually talk about like data, as you mentioned, like just building pipeline and prospecting and that part. But I would say the data is equally or maybe even more important, like further along the sales process to convert and to be relevant. So a good example of this is obviously like before you go to a meeting, you want to be well informed. You would never go to a meeting without like understanding their like challenges or understanding what company they have. You probably look at their website, you might be Googling them. You always do this research before going to a meeting. And for some people that might take a lot of time, you know, because there's so many sources where you can find information. But this data is so relevant, and like you can actually like collect this data and make it visible in one single place in the CRM, for example. So if you have like access to a lot of data before you go to a meeting, and just the relevant data, of course, you can get a full view of the company and you can make very, very tailored like presentations for that sales meeting. So imagine if you know like what platforms they're using, you know how much people they appointed recently, and you know how many employees they are and all these things, your presentation will probably be a lot more on point and more relevant. And then after like the meetings, et cetera, like I guess a lot of people in a lot of companies have very long sales cycles. And then you also have to have like the connection and the relevance like during those couple of months or years. And you also have to be using the data in that point. So say, for example, that you've made an offer to a prospect and then you're seeing that they're hiring so much more people and they're expanding to a new market. And then your offer might not be relevant anymore. If you as a salesperson would be the one to point out that this offer is probably not relevant for you because I saw that you did this and this, you would get so much more trust instead of them having to come to you and be like, hey, can we get a new offer?
That's exactly. I mean, when you have this kind of approach and this kind of honesty on your sales process, you gain a lot of ground in the prospect's mind. And
that's the idea.
More trust.
Yeah, and it's not just all like obviously like external data, like mentioned, is like super important, but also like internal data, like intent data, behavioral data. So same as like before, if you're having a very long sales process, you're seeing that they're all of a sudden visiting your website much more than they have before, and they're making changes in the organization. That's like when you should really have a tight connection with them, because you're seeing all these points. And same opposite, like I think one of the most common mistakes that salespeople are doing is that they're holding on too tight on some deals. You know, like you have this deal and you have a very good connection with the buyer and you're spending so much time on it. But then you're like, if you would actually look at the data, you would see that they haven't visited your website for 4 months, say 4 months. And they made some changes in their organization that are actually bad for you. Maybe they like shut down an office or they have a negative cash flow or something. And those deals you should not be putting your time on, because the data tells you that this is not a good deal anymore. It's about killing your darlings using data as well.
Your darlings. That was the expression. It's like it doesn't matter how much you like the deal you're trying to close. If the data doesn't like it, it's better to trust the data, right?
Of course. So using the data throughout the sales process to make smarter decisions. That's what Red Time Sales is about.
Yeah, a lot of things that LinkedIn and company available information is the entry door. You can't do sales meetings without the information available there. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more than that. It's great to understand some options from you.
Yeah.
Emily, in terms of sales metrics, do you see any difference in numbers from a traditional approach, numbers maybe traditional approach in sales, bit closely tracking down, and others which are not that much? How do you see this difference in terms of sales metrics? What's the difference in terms of numbers you track and KPIs you track for salespeople and for the sales organizations when you are using real-time sales? It's stronger and when you're not.
I think real-time sales is about shifting from a very like quantitative approach, like where it's mostly about activity, 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 to a more like quality approach. Like you're focusing on actual like conversions and number of like sales, basically. So obviously I think the KPIs are a bit different. It depends probably on what kind of role you have, but in our organization, like when we had a real-time sales team, and now when everyone is working real-time, we're focusing less on like the amount of calls you make and the amount of companies you're contacting, and more on obviously like booked meeting, because that's a good indicator, but then also like on conversions. So you started 20 new deals this week or 20 new opportunities this week. How many of them converted to meetings? And then in the end, like how many of those converted to deals? It's more about that part than actually activity.
Right. So you let the activities a bit on the side. So you take less attention to the activities and you're working on real time. Is that correct?
Yes. Because also, like, if you're a sales director and you're only telling your salespeople to focus on activity and to be like super focused on sales calls and booked meetings. Those salespeople are probably more motivated to just call every kind of company without any reason, just because that's what they're measured on. But if you're actually measured on like conversions and sales, then you're more likely to spend time on good deals, and you won't be spending time on random deals just because you have to reach your numbers. I think that's an important
difference. You can choose better, maybe smarter. Mm-hmm. Metric yeah. isn't more related to results than to efforts. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And if you look like sales organization-wise, like KPIs and what you're going to track, I think it's pretty similar with the triggers. Obviously, when you're implementing a real-time sales strategy and when you're looking at with triggers to test and to work with, you always have to measure those as well. So, for example, like test a couple of triggers and make sure that you track like how many triggers you started, how many of those triggers became meetings, deals, the average deal value, the average like sales cycle, all these numbers, and then use these numbers in order to just tweak your process as well. So if there are triggers that are outperforming other triggers, then you know where to put your time, basically, and what to focus on.
Yeah, and that's great, because I like the approach of real-time sales in terms of better decisions and better KPIs tracking, but I also like it in terms of new KPIs tracking you hadn't before, which is evaluating the efficiency of your triggers themselves and your workflow themselves, right?
And it's very interesting. We, like I mentioned, we've tested this a lot internally and have put a lot of emphasis on like comparing, you know, the traditional approach where we were more active, like much with a lot of companies, and then inbound, of course, and then the outbound triggers. And we've seen like our salespeople from the traditional approach that we were doing before, from meeting to deal, we had a hit rate of about just below 10%. So 1 out of 10 of the meetings that we held, we closed. And that's like, all right. That's all right. But with inbound, like a demo request, for example, we closed 18% of the deals that we went into meeting. And that makes sense.
That's a lot better.
Yeah, that's a lot better, and that makes sense. But what we saw that was like way more interesting is that the outbound triggers, so the companies we were contacting like real time because there was a change, those were performing even better. They had a hit rate of almost 22% from meeting to deal, because we were contacting them at the right time, and we made sure that those companies were in our ICP, and we were nurturing them so much because we had this like marketing approach to it. Outbound triggers in our organization were actually outperforming inbounds, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I heard that happening before, and not that often though. And it's amazing to understand how you can set up your outbound triggers or your outbound workflows, knowing they are at least as efficient as inbound, because you have a lot more, let's say, room for expansion. It's the path for growth. When you have this in place, it looks quite good.
And it's also cool because we saw a very, very much of a change also in like company culture and like confidence with the salespeople, the sales reps. Like if the salespeople that were in the real-time sales team and were starting to work this way, obviously, they had so much better discussions. They didn't get know as much immediately, and they were having like, these real discussions with all of these prospects, and they were selling more, and their conversion rates are better and everything. And with these results and with these also comes confidence.
That's confidence. Great.
Yeah, so these people were more confident, and with confidence, again, comes better results. It was really awakening for us as well.
Like the self-reinforcing positive cycle, right? Of results and culture and better conversation. I had no idea about how real-time sales could impact the culture of the organization. And if I'm a company and if I want to get started with real-time sales, which are the ground rules I should lay to start going?
I think I couldn't emphasize it enough, and I've said it a couple of times, but like, first of all, know your ideal customer profile. Best start. Then also make sure that you have like a good data foundation. You have like a structured process of where you store your data and how you use your data and everything. So if you don't have like a CRM, that's a very good first start. Have a CRM and make sure that you have a structured process of how you're like, you know, tracking your deals and adding information about them, etc. And then like if you're further along, like adding sales intelligence tools, marketing automation, everything, and make sure that the data is all the same in all these systems, like the data is aligned so these systems can talk to, or these platforms can talk to each other. Because that really helps with like being real time and having salespeople act on information soon enough if the data can flow. So for an organization, I would say that. And then also make sure that your sales and marketing people are, you know, united and aligned. Like if your sales and marketing people aren't on the same side, it's going to be difficult to work with real-time sales. Yeah, because you have to have like good content and good resources to share, between, and then understand each other's challenges, how the sales process is structured.
And out of everything you mentioned, I really like the importance of having all data sources connected and talking to each other, because otherwise you're gonna have like, it's quite funny when you have like two or three different tools, each of one telling a different version of the story. Yeah. But you're like, it's the same data. How can that be? Like, how can I have 20% conversion rate on Pipedrive and 10% conversion rate in this other tool? It doesn't make sense. It's like, come on.
No, and I've seen so many companies like in meetings I've held that have like their CRM and their marketing automation is not talking to each other at all. So,
for example,
no, it's not talking to each other. So a salesperson might have documented in the CRM that this is not a good lead and we should never be in contact with them again and blah, 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 blah. And then the marketing automation tool is just like not aligned. So marketing is just sending out all these, you know, nurturing campaigns to this company. And if the data, like if the data would be, or the platforms would be aligned, we would not be doing that. That would not happen. Yeah, it's super important that you have the same data throughout your technology.
I just wonder the face of the sales rep, of the sales professional getting this lead, like, oh, come on, these guys again. Come on, marketing people. You know?
I know. And with same data, you can also create these very cool workflows between. At Vino, for example, in the CRM, if I would be a sales rep and I would own an account in the CRM, if a company or if a contact at that account would convert at our website and be very engaged with our content, I would get a notification or a task in the CRM about this. So in the CRM, I would say like, hey, this person has downloaded this ebook and also talked to your support, for example. And that's super valuable insights for me as a sales rep to get for marketing. And if you're able as an organization to make sure that your sales reps are getting all these insights like real time, then you're way ahead of your competitors.
That's perfect. And sales and marketing alignment is a huge topic. We have been talking about it for a while now. And about the sales reps, and also to close out this interview, which tips would you give to individual sales reps and sales professionals on how to be more data driven? How do you see them developing this kind of approach to sales?
I would say, first of all, to be fully data driven, just salespeople have to stop putting so much trust in their gut feeling. Like I said before, just kill your darlings. Salespeople are focusing a lot of the time on deals that would never buy from you just because you have a good relationship. And they're missing out on leads because they're not looking at the data. So I would just say that just like go to the data, measure your activities, measure your hit rates, and trust the data, first of all. And then also just be like, be creative, be active, talk to marketing, test new things, you know, don't be afraid. If you're sending a message and testing something new to trigger, just do it. If it doesn't work, nothing bad will happen. You know?
Yeah.
And also, probably my last tip for real-time sales for individual sales reps is to also have these predefined messages and workflows. you have three triggers that you're following. You be very standardized how you're approaching these. For example, I was using the same kind of like email approach or like the same kind of like content approach, depending on the triggers. So for new sales directors, I would have this starting it and it would already be written and finished. So I knew how I would act on all these triggers. I had a, like a predefined workflow for all these triggers.
And I think that's exactly what our sales professionals should listen to. And I believe that if you could apply some of your advice and some of the experience you're bringing to the table, you and your guys, Vino, you have a lot of a quite better sales environment. And I believe looking at data for our salespeople is the next step down here. We are looking for how salespeople can actually look at the numbers, understand them, act on them, and being aware how it's going to benefit themselves and the companies, and ultimately the clients also, because you want to be sold something you need, right? Not something you don't. So that's the most important part at the end of the day.
I agree fully. Like you said, you want to sell something because it's needed. The other company has actual need for your services, not because it's a sale. In the end, like, you don't want to have churned customers after a year.
Exactly. Emily, thanks a lot for coming and for the advice. I know it's holidays there in Sweden today and you are taking this time to talk to us. I appreciate that a lot and I hope we can have more conversations like that in the near future.
Of course, and thank you so much for having me again. It's been a lot of fun, and as you probably noticed, I could talk about this for hours. So feel free to reach out to me. You can reach me on LinkedIn or email or whatever, and I will be super, super happy to spread the word about real-time sales and to hopefully inspire some people.
Yeah, I'm going to leave your contacts here. Thanks a lot.